Welcome back, everybody, for another deep dive with us. Today, we're looking at a case that's pretty disturbing. We're going to be talking about child abuse. You know, it's a tough subject, but a really important one, especially in the legal field. So let's jump right in. This case centers around a young boy, D'Amico, and the adults who failed to protect him.
Yeah, it's a tough one for sure. This case really raises some serious questions about where the line is, you know, between just being a bystander and actually being criminally liable.
Right. And that's exactly what Pope v. State, a landmark Maryland case, grapples with. So we're going to break down the facts, the legal arguments, and the implications of this really, really complex case.
Absolutely. And, you know, this case went through a whole roller coaster of decisions. It's pretty unique, actually, because both the initial conviction and the appeal were later overturned.
Wow. Okay. So paint us a picture. What happened? Who are the key players here?
All right. So we've got Joyce Pope. She's the defendant. She allowed a woman named Melissa and her son D'Amico to stay at her house. Now, Melissa, she was the abuser in this situation. She was brutally abusing D'Amico.
And where does Pope fit into all of this? Was she involved in the abuse?
No, she wasn't the abuser herself. But the thing is, she witnessed the abuse happening, and she do nothing to stop it.
Oh, wow. So she was present, saw what was going on, but didn't intervene or report it.
Exactly. And that's where the legal battle really gets interesting. Was her inaction, her silence, enough to make her legally responsible for what happened to D'Amico?
It sounds like a classic case of turning a blind eye. But is that actually a crime? I mean, is there a law against simply failing to report something terrible that you see?
Well, that's where it gets tricky. And that's actually one of the big questions this case had to address. See, Pope was initially found guilty of two charges. Child abuse, which, you know, we're all familiar with, but also this other really unusual charge called misprision of felony.
Misprision of what now? I have to admit, I've never even heard of that.
Most people haven't. It's a pretty obscure common law crime. Basically, it means you knew about a serious crime, like a felony, you saw it, but you didn't report it to the authorities.
So you can actually be held criminally liable just for staying silent about a crime, even if you didn't participate in it. That's wild.
It is a fascinating concept, and it really gets to the heart of what we consider to be our civic duties, our responsibility to society as a whole. But as you might imagine, it's also pretty controversial. In fact, misprision of felony has fallen out of favor in many jurisdictions, and Pope v. State played a big role in that shift.
Wow. Okay, so we've got child abuse, this strange misprision of felony thing, and a case that bounced back and forth between guilty and not guilty verdicts. Where do we even begin to unpack all of this?
Well, first, we need to dig into the specific language of the law. The Maryland child abuse statute hinges on this phrase, responsibility for supervision. And believe it or not, that's where things get really, really nuanced.
Okay, I'm intrigued. How did the court interpret that phrase, and how did it apply to Pope's situation? Because, yeah, she wasn't D'Amico's mother.
Right, and that's a crucial point. The Maryland Court of Appeals, they took a very, very narrow view of that responsibility for supervision language. Basically, they concluded that even though Pope provided some temporary care for D'Amico at times, it didn't rise to the level of legal responsibility that the child abuse statute required.
So just being around a child, maybe even helping out with them occasionally, doesn't automatically mean you're legally on the hook for their safety and well-being.
Exactly. The court was very careful to distinguish between what we might think of as a moral obligation to protect a child versus what actually constitutes a legal duty under the law. And in this case, they decided that Pope, while her inaction might have been morally reprehensible, it didn't actually meet the legal threshold for child abuse.
But hold on. Even if she wasn't technically a caregiver in the eyes of the law, she still allowed them to stay at her house knowing what was going on. Didn't that factor into the court's thinking at all? What about the idea of, like, aiding and abetting a crime?
That's a great question, and it gets to the heart of what it means to be complicit in a crime. And for that, we need to talk about this idea of active encouragement. You see, the court found that simply allowing the abuse to occur within her home on its own didn't actually amount to actively encouraging or assisting Melissa in her abuse of D'Amico.
So it wasn't enough for her to just be passively aware of the abuse happening under her roof. For it to be considered aiding and abetting, the court needed to see evidence that she was actually taking steps to support or facilitate the abuse itself.
Precisely. That distinction was critical in understanding why the court ultimately didn't find her guilty on the child abuse charge. They really focused on the specific actions, or rather inactions, of Pope, and determined that they didn't meet the requirements for that particular charge.
Okay, that makes sense. So let's turn to that other really unusual charge, this misfrisian of felony. You said it's this old, kind of obscure common law crime. Where did that even come from? Like, what's the historical context for that?
It's actually a pretty fascinating legal relic dating back centuries. You see, common law crimes, they're not laid out in specific statutes like most modern laws. They developed over time through court decisions and legal traditions. And misprision of felony, essentially, it reflects this old idea that concealing a felony is itself an offense against the public good.
So the thinking was that if you see a serious crime and don't report it, you're not just being a bad citizen, you're actually committing a crime yourself by allowing that criminal activity to potentially continue unchecked.
Exactly. The idea was that by staying silent, you could be hindering justice, maybe even putting others at risk. It's this concept of a duty to the community, a responsibility to help uphold the law, even if you weren't directly involved in the initial crime.
Okay, I get it. It makes sense in theory. So why did the Maryland Court of Appeals ultimately throw it out in Pope v. State? Did they decide that misprision of felony was unconstitutional or something?
Well, not exactly. They didn't strike it down as unconstitutional. Instead, they argue that it was just too broad and too outdated to really fit within the framework of modern law. They were concerned that it could end up criminalizing a lot of innocent behavior. Like, imagine someone being afraid to come forward with information about a crime because they were worried they might get in trouble themselves.
Yeah, I can see that. Like, if you're worried that just knowing about a crime could get you in legal hot water, you might be less likely to report it, even if you want to do the right thing. It creates this chilling effect.
Exactly. And the court was very aware of that potential chilling effect. They also make a point of emphasizing the separation of powers between the different branches of government. They're basically saying, look, it's not our job as the judiciary to invent new crimes. That's the legislature's role.
So their decision to toss out the misprision of felony charge was partly about clarifying the boundaries between the courts and lawmakers. They were saying, hey, if you want people to be legally required to report certain crimes, then you, the legislature, need to pass a specific law outlining that.
Exactly. And they pointed out that in Maryland, there were already laws on the books that address specific reporting requirements, especially in cases involving child abuse or neglect. So it's not like they were dismissing the importance of reporting crime. They just felt that misprision of felony as a standalone offense was just too vague and too sweeping.
Okay, that makes sense. But wait, I thought you said earlier that the appeals court actually upheld the misprision of felony charge initially. So how did it end up being completely thrown out? Wasn't there a dissenting opinion in all of this?
You're absolutely right. There was a dissent. Judge Eldred actually argued pretty forcefully for a much broader interpretation of the child abuse statute. He believed it should apply to anyone in a position of what he called de facto responsibility for a child.
De facto responsibility. Meaning, even if you weren't officially the kid's parent or guardian, if you were basically acting as a caretaker, you could still be held accountable.
Precisely. He felt that the majority's interpretation of the law was way too narrow and that it would leave too many vulnerable children unprotected. He even went so far as to say that the majority's decision was, and I quote, unjustifiably narrowing a critical protective statute.
Wow. That's a pretty strong statement. It sounds like he felt very strongly that the court was missing the mark, both legally and ethically. So even though he didn't sway the majority, it sounds like his dissent raises some really important questions about how we define responsibility and how we balance legal precision with, well, with our sense of moral obligation. It's a really interesting tension, isn't it?
Absolutely. And it's a tension that goes far beyond the specifics of this particular case. Pope v. State really forces us to think about those big questions. What do we owe to each other as members of a society? When does our inaction become unacceptable, even criminal?
Yeah, those are big questions for sure, and ones we're going to keep exploring as we dive deeper into the implications of Pope v. State.
It's easy to get lost in the weeds of all the legal arguments and court decisions, but, you know, at the end of the day, this case is about a child, D'Amico, who was brutally abused and ultimately lost his life. It's the sobering reminder of the real human cost of these legal battles.
Absolutely. It's a tragic story, and it's easy to get caught up in the legal back and forth. But we can't forget that at the heart of this is a young boy who suffered a terrible fate.
Exactly. And while the court's decision might seem very technical and legalistic, it has some pretty big implications for how we as a society think about child abuse and how we respond to it.
So let's talk about those implications. How did Pope v. State actually change things in a practical sense? What impact did it have on child abuse laws in Maryland?
Well, one of the most significant outcomes was that it really clarified the scope of Maryland's child abuse statute. Before this case, there was some ambiguity about who could be held legally responsible for a child's safety.
Right, because in this case, Pope wasn't D'Amico's parent or legal guardian. So it wasn't immediately obvious whether she would even fall under the umbrella of the child abuse law.
Exactly. And that's what Pope v. State settled. It established very clearly that only those with a very specific, legally defined supervisory role, like parents, guardians, foster parents, could be found guilty of child abuse for failing to protect a child.
So in a way, it narrowed the definition of who could be held legally accountable.
Yeah.
It shifted the focus away from this broader sense of moral responsibility that we might all feel and really zeroed in on these specific legal duties.
Precisely. And that had a real impact on how prosecutors approached these kinds of cases. After Pope, it wasn't enough to just show that someone was aware of the abuse happening. They had to prove that the person had a clear legal obligation to intervene. And that's a much higher bar to clear.
I can see how that could be a double-edged sword. On the one hand, it provides more clarity and predictability in the legal system, which is important. But on the other hand, does it make it harder to hold abusers accountable if the legal threshold for those who fail to report is set so high?
That's a valid concern. And there are definitely arguments to be made on both sides. Some people argue that it creates a loophole, allowing people to turn a blind eye to abuse simply because they're not technically legally obligated to step in. But others would say that it protects individuals from being unfairly prosecuted based on these vague notions of morality or personal responsibility. It's all about striking that balance.
So it's a tough issue for sure. Okay, but even though Pope narrowed the legal definition of child abuse, didn't it also leave some avenues open for holding bystanders accountable? Like, what about those mandatory reporting laws you mentioned earlier?
Right, those are still very much in effect, and they apply regardless of the Pope ruling. So even if you're not a child's parent or guardian, if you're in one of those mandated reporter professions, you still have a legal duty to report any suspected abuse.
So for teachers, doctors, social workers, therapists for them, that obligation to report is independent of whether they fit the court's definition of responsible for supervision.
Exactly. And of course, beyond the legal requirements, there's always that moral dimension. Even if the law doesn't specifically compel you to act, there's still that ethical question of what you should do when you see a child in danger.
Right. Sometimes doing the right thing means going above and beyond what the law requires. It's about recognizing that we all have a responsibility to protect vulnerable people, especially children.
You've hit the nail on the head. And speaking of legal and moral obligations, we can't forget about the other major consequence of Pope v. State, the effective end of misprision of felony in Maryland.
Oh, yeah, that's right. It's like that weird, archaic crime just vanished. I mean, it's kind of hard to believe that something like that even existed in the first place. The idea that you could be thrown in jail just for knowing about a crime and not saying anything, it just seems so, I don't know, so out of touch with modern legal thinking.
You're not alone in feeling that way. And the Maryland Court of Appeals, they basically agreed. They recognized that misprision of felony as a concept was just out of sync with contemporary legal principles. They argued that it was overly broad, could criminalize a lot of innocent behavior, and frankly, it was just unnecessary.
Unnecessary. But doesn't that send the message that it's okay to just turn a blind eye to crime? Like, if there's no legal penalty for staying silent, what's to stop people from just ignoring what they see and minding their own business?
I can see why people would be concerned about that. But the court's argument was that it wasn't their job to create new crimes. That's the legislature's role.
So they were drawing a line between the powers of the judicial and legislative branches. They were basically saying, look, if you want to make it a crime for people to not report certain things, that's your prerogative, lawmakers. But we're not going to dust off this old common law concept to fill that gap.
Exactly. And they pointed out that Maryland already had other laws in place, like witness tampering laws and obstruction of justice statutes, that could address those situations where someone actively concealed a crime or interfered with an investigation. So it wasn't that they were dismissing the importance of reporting crime. They just felt there were already other more specific legal mechanisms in place to handle that.
Okay, that makes sense. So we've got this one case, Pope v. State, with these really specific facts, and yet it ends up having these really broad implications for criminal law in Maryland. It clarifies the definition of child abuse, leads to the demise of misprision of felony, and even touches on the separation of powers between the different branches of government. It's amazing how one case can set off this ripple effect.
It really highlights how individual cases can sometimes act as catalysts for broader legal and societal change. They force us to confront those tough questions, to re-examine our assumptions, and to think critically about how the law should evolve to address the challenges of our time.
It's like, We start with this really specific story, this one woman, and her decision to remain silent in the face of abuse. And then it extends outward, raising all these bigger questions about responsibility, justice, and the role of the law in shaping how we behave.
You're absolutely right. And even though the Pope case ultimately narrowed the legal definition of child abuse in Maryland, it also, in a way, broadened the scope of the ethical conversation. It made us think more deeply about those gray areas, those situations where the law might not provide a clear answer, but where we still had to wrestle with what we believe is the right thing to do.
Yeah, and it reminds us that the law is not this static, unchanging thing. It's a constantly evolving reflection of who we are as a society and what we value. And sometimes it takes a case like Pope v. State to push us to confront those difficult questions and to have those conversations about where we want to draw the line.
Okay, so we've covered the majority opinion, the rationale behind tossing out the misprision of felony charge, and how this case reshaped the legal landscape. But let's circle back to that dissenting opinion for a moment. We touched upon it earlier, but I think it's worth digging a little deeper. You mentioned that one of the judges had a very different take on the case.
Absolutely. Judge Eldridge, he wrote a really powerful dissent, arguing that the majority's interpretation of the child abuse statute was just way too narrow. He felt very strongly that they were, in essence, letting Pope off the hook, despite her knowing about the abuse and having the opportunity to intervene.
He was advocating for a much broader application of the law, wasn't he? One that moved beyond those strict legal definitions of parenthood or guardianship. Exactly. He argued that the statute should be interpreted more expansively to include anyone who had what he called de facto responsibility for a child's well-being. So even if you weren't technically the kid's legal guardian, if you were, for all intents and purposes, acting as a caretaker, you could be held accountable.
It's like he was trying to capture that sense of moral responsibility we were talking about earlier. Like, even if the law doesn't explicitly say you're responsible, if you're in a position to protect a child, you have an ethical obligation to do so.
Yes. He felt very strongly that the law should reflect that fundamental moral imperative to safeguard children, regardless of technicalities. And he was deeply concerned that the majority's ruling would essentially create a dangerous loophole. Mm-hmm. He worried that it would give people an excuse to turn a blind eye to abuse simply because they weren't legally obligated to get involved.
It's a compelling argument, and it really gets to the heart of those fundamental questions we were talking about earlier. Where does legal responsibility end? And where do our broader ethical duties begin? It's like he was saying, look, we can't just rely on the letter of the law. We have to consider the spirit of the law, the moral principles that underpin it.
And even though his dissent didn't change the outcome of the case, it does provide a really valuable counterpoint. It reminds us that legal decisions are rarely black and white. There are often multiple perspectives, different ways of interpreting the law, and competing values at play.
It's a good reminder that there's almost always another side to every legal argument. And in this case, that other side really forces us to grapple with some pretty profound ethical and moral questions. So where do we go from here? What are the lasting impacts of Pope v. State? How does it continue to influence child welfare laws and practices today?
So we've really dug deep into Pope v. State. We've examined the child abuse statute, that whole misprision of felony thing, even touched on separation of powers. It's been a journey. But what's the takeaway for us? What are we left with after all this?
You know, Pope v. State, it's more than just a case. It's like this crossroads, you know?
Yeah.
Legally, ethically, it makes us face some tough questions about responsibility, justice, how the law shapes us, you know, as people.
It's not just some dusty old case in a law book. It's about real world stuff, how we treat each other, especially, you know, those who need protecting.
Exactly. Like this debate about moral responsibility versus what's actually in the law, still going on, this case fuels it. Should we broaden who counts as an abuser, you know, under child abuse law? Or is that, like, too vague? Could be unfair. Tough call, right? We want kids safe, no question.
Yeah.
But we also don't want folks scared to help, thinking they'll get sued or something.
And that's where the ethics come in strong. What if the law is silent? Are there times we have to act, even if it's risky, personally?
Deep stuff, right. Goes way beyond the courtroom. What do WE believe is right, even when the law is fuzzy?
You got it. That's Pope v. State's legacy. Keeps those conversations alive. Law's not frozen in time. It reflects us. As we change, it changes.
So Pope, yeah, it narrowed who's legally responsible, but it also made us think bigger about ethics, like more to consider than just the legal stuff.
Totally. Open discussion matters. Thinking critically about law, how it impacts what we do.
So for our listeners, what's the big thing they should walk away with? from all this Pope talk.
Understanding how complex child abuse is, it's not simple. Balancing the letter of the law with what's morally right, that's tough. Pope isn't just about one lady who didn't act. It's society's struggle. Where's the responsibility lie? What's justice? And law, you know, it has its limits.
It makes us think. Not just what law is, but what it should be. And maybe more important, what do I, myself, believe? How would I act if a kid's in trouble?
One thing that keeps bugging me, should bystanders have to act? Legally, I mean. Big debate still. Lawmakers, professors, ethicists, all arguing.
Big picture, right? It's freedom versus everyone looking out for each other. Do we force people to get involved? Or is it like, stay out of it, your choice?
Fascinating dilemma, no easy answers. Each society has to figure that out, what matters most to them.
Makes you think. Law's not just words on paper, it's us, constantly changing. Popery State, it gave us legal answers, sure, but it also opened up a whole can of ethical worms. We're still dealing with them today, you know, as individuals, as a whole society. That's it for this deep dive, everyone. Thanks for joining us, and we'll catch you next time for another fascinating look at the law, its complexities, and its impacts on our lives.